I really hope my legislators don't want people to die when I'm treating an ectopic pregnancy. A pregnancy that, you know, I know there was the Ohio law where they were saying you had to, you know, transplant an ectopic from the tube into the womb.
Which can't be done. That's impossible.
Cannot be done. An ectopic is clearly life-threatening without any potential gain, right? And so we decided to give our legislators the benefit of the doubt and say we don't think that they understood what they were doing. You know, there's no malpractice for legislators.
Right.
They can make a law that makes no sense and is bad care, but there's no consequences to them.
Hey everybody, it's Dr. Kristen Lyerly, and I am here with my dear friend and colleague from Knoxville, Tennessee, Dr. Nikki Zeit. She practices complex family planning. That means that she helps people with birth control and abortion and all of those challenging reproductive tasks. And man, is she in a rough spot. Nikki, thank you for joining me today.
Thank you for having me.
Girl, what is happening in Tennessee? I have been hearing whispers about this legislation that's being floated that women who get an abortion would be charged for murder and the death penalty would be sought. Is that right?
That is the rumor. And it has been, you know, recorded and posted. But right now it is just a caption bill. So on our legislative website, there are a bunch of bills that just have a paragraph of what it might be about. And then they leave that up until they come up with something to fill it with. And then it can be like totally different than what the topic is about. I think the caption for this one is actually related to the monument for the unborn. But what they're proposing is a right to life written law that criminalizes abortion. And if you look online, you can see the recording of, you know, someone from the Right to Life and a pastor that are essentially just out there saying they think, you know, essentially an eye for an eye. If you, quote, kill a baby, you should go to death. And that they're basically upset that they didn't quite believe that when someone is pregnant and does not want to be pregnant, they will go to the ends of the earth to
literally
end that pregnancy. And prior to prior to Roe, that meant having back alley or illegal, unsafe abortions.
Mm-hmm.
After Dobbs, it meant getting medication abortion, right? And ideally having safe options. They're mad about that. They mm-hmm. literally in this clip say that it should be in the back alley because it's a crime.
It should be in the back alley.
And that they want women to either die in the process of having abortions or be arrested and, you know, potentially tried with a penalty of life if they have an abortion.
Nikki, this is insane.
There's just so little empathy mm-hmm. and understanding that pregnancy is not always planned or desired or safe. And it's such a privilege, right? These white men are the ones that are saying this.
I don't even think it's empathy. It's humanity. Mm-hmm. This eye for an eye, this wanting to torture and kill people for making decisions about their reproductive lives and the trajectory that these decisions set the rest of their lives on and their families. We're not just talking about somebody who lives in a vacuum. We're talking about communities of people who are not only making a decision whether or not to continue a pregnancy, but whether or not to continue a pregnancy that maybe even threatens their own lives physically and socially.
I haven't seen where this law comes on things like when the life is at risk, but we don't have a great history of that in Tennessee, right?
Yes.
Our trigger law, which was 2 pages, defined pregnancy as in the body and then had no exceptions. So for the first year of our abortion ban, we were practicing in a situation where by the letter of the law, treating an ectopic pregnancy, treating a molar pregnancy, treating a inevitable miscarriage were all felonies.
And these are all pregnancies that not only will not survive, but all put the life of the person who is carrying the pregnancy in danger. Not a little danger. They could very much potentially die.
Yes.
How do you practice in this environment? How do you personally practice in this environment where people are so afraid to seek care?
Yeah. So while it completely is morally distressing and terrible to not be able to treat everyone that we feel, you know, desires the care that they should be able to get, I feel in my particular setting, I have been, I don't know, the least of the worst, mm-hmm. the affected. We really saw it coming, right? We knew the trigger law, and not that I'm a lawyer or understand laws, but it was only 2 pages and the word exception was nowhere in it. I had to learn a lot about affirmative defense, which essentially was, you know, guilty until proven innocent. But it wasn't that hard to say, I really hope my legislators don't want people to die when I'm treating an ectopic pregnancy, a pregnancy that, you know, I know there was the Ohio law where they were saying you had to, you know, transplant an ectopic from the tube into the womb.
Which can't be done. That's impossible.
Cannot be done. An ectopic is clearly life-threatening without any potential gain, right? And so we decided to give our legislators the benefit of the doubt and say we don't think that they understood what they were doing. You know, there's no malpractice for legislators.
Right.
They can make a law that makes no sense and is bad care, but there's no consequences to them. But we, and by we, I mean like myself, the high-risk OB doctors at my institution, we went and we got institutional support to practice what we believed was the intent of the law, which was still terrible, mm-hmm. but not the letter of the law. So from the very beginning, we and then some of the other institutions across our state decided that we were going to treat ectopics. We were going to treat molar pregnancies. And then we were going to advocate for our law to be changed. And so at the first year mark, they did amend our law so that there were exceptions for miscarriage, previable PPROM, ectopic pregnancy, and molar pregnancy.
So you were able to band together with your colleagues and the support of the institution where you work, because they recognize how impossible this is, right. So that you could treat conditions like someone whose water broke at 17 weeks and the pregnancy would be desperate, threatened, the mother's life would be at risk. We've heard this story so many times.
Right. And we had the stuff from Texas, right? Because they were 6 months before us in all of these things, and they were already seeing these things. And we're really grateful for the folks that published, it was small, you know, 28 patients, but a study that showed when you don't offer people who have these complications treatment, you have no benefit to the pregnancy, and you have risk to the mom, the pregnant person. So we had that publication, we showed it to our hospital lawyers and our hospital executive team, and we said, we have no intention of providing what we know our legislators meant, right? We weren't happy about it, but mm-hmm. we were not going to treat fetal anomalies, because that had come up numerous times, and we had petitioned and tried to get that as an exception, and they were very clear about that.
Fetal anomalies being things that prevent that would prevent the fetus from having a meaningful survival.
Absolutely.
Like anencephaly, not having a brain. So many things can happen that people right. don't know about until they're in that situation.
Yeah. And we tried to emphasize that to our legislators, and they were like, don't talk to me. I still believe it's a life. I still want to control the pregnant person and don't want to let the family dealing with that horrible scenario decide what is best for their family. We're just gonna make them carry the pregnancy.
Which is so much more dangerous. The number we quote is 14 times more dangerous to carry the pregnancy than to have an abortion in the first trimester.
And we know that abnormal pregnancies have more risk than normal pregnancies.
Yes, and I don't know if you saw this new data that came out, but there was a study that was done recently that showed that 14 is actually a gross underestimate, and they think it's more like 40 something. So, or maybe that's just in the new environment where we're living, where people are being forced to carry these very risky pregnancies to term against their will.
Or people are presenting late to care because they're scared about, you know, not even necessarily these abortion laws, but, you know, I'm sure you're seeing it too. People who are afraid to leave their house and come to doctor's appointments because they might be picked up by ICE.
Yes.
Totally different, you know, yeah. Dystopian world.
It sure is a dystopian world. And you had mentioned earlier medication abortion. We know that since the Dobbs decision, most abortions now across the country are medication abortions, but mifepristone is under attack. There's another FDA review, even though we know it is safe and effective. We have more than two decades of evidence and experience with this medication. How does that change your approach to your patient and your thoughts about the future of abortion care, not just in Tennessee, but in this country?
Yeah, I mean, well, while it is available, you know, it at least is something that I can talk to my patients about. There's not a gag order in our law that we're aware of. There's some question with the minors and how that law was interpreted. Certainly there's a trafficking minor law that says if you help a minor get out of the state without a parent, that that could potentially be criminalized. But right now we can at least talk to patients who tell us that they don't want to be pregnant about options out of state or options of medication abortion. We are not, you know, really, people will ask, what do you do, especially when this idea of criminalizing the pregnant person comes up. Mm-hmm. You know, do we always ask a patient when they come in pregnant and bleeding if they had done anything to start the process? That's just not important. A pregnant mm-hmm. patient that's bleeding is treated the same way, whether she took some medication to cause that or whether it's spontaneous. So anything I don't need to know to take care of the patient, I don't necessarily want to know. If a patient wants to tell me and they trust me, I'm grateful they trust me, but it doesn't necessarily need to be part of their medical record in this day and age, which I never thought I would have said. Mm-hmm. Because there are some ways that it can be relevant in future pregnancies. But it's just right now, the safest thing is the less I know, the better.
Right. We were not trained that way. We were not trained to just not document things. We were trained to ask every question and document everything. And it is just such a different environment now. So one more question for you. Do you worry about yourself practicing in this environment where you know that it's hostile and there are so many people who don't want the kind of care that you are providing to be given to these patients?
So I have been at an academic center my entire career and haven't done a lot of outpatient induced abortions, which maybe I'm naive, but I felt like that kind of protected me, and I've always been grateful to the people in my community that were providing that care, and I always functioned to be their backup or their the person they referred to if they had a complication or if they thought that a patient had an ectopic pregnancy who had presented for abortion care. So I was filling my role and sometimes felt like a poser because I did a complex family planning fellowship and was not doing outpatient induced abortion care, but I was a residency program director. I was working in advocacy, and I was talking about abortion all the time. So I never wore a bulletproof vest. I never really felt unsafe, but I think everybody who does this work every once in a while has that thought. Certainly when I've gone and testified in our legislature, which I really don't do anymore because I didn't see it having a value. Mm-hmm. I actually thought that maybe I was hurting the topics by being there. But I do think that at least one time that I was there was some social media about my testimony that I thought was perfect, purposeful in drawing attention to me and potentially putting me at risk by a former residency classmate of mine.
Oh, wow. Oh, that's so painful on so many different levels.
Yeah. I was more worried that I was going to get arrested in that first year. We thought it was really unlikely that the type of care we were providing was going to be criminalized. But when you're ending a pregnancy for maternal indications, that's really gray, right? Like, there's no absolute cutoff. If she has heart failure and she has a 20% chance of death, is that the risk of severe bodily harm that I'm allowed to intervene for, or does it have to be 50%? So, I mean, while I never made a decision like that in a vacuum, it was always, you know, what the patient desired with our MFMs, and we were all working together. I was never in the operating room by myself. There were still times where I was worried that somebody would disagree with our management plan.
It's just not easy.
Yeah.
What do you want people to know about the work that you do, the people that you serve?
I think I just want people to know that even in the best of situations, there will always be people who need to end a pregnancy. And no one can ever understand what that family or person is going through and what is driving them to not be able to be pregnant or parent at that time, and that it should be an individual decision. The legislators need to stop making arbitrary rules over something that is so complex.
You're so right. Dr. Nikki Zeit in Tennessee, you're my hero.
That just seems so ridiculous because you are out there doing so much. Right back at you.
We are all doing this work, and we have to because our patients need us. 1 in 4 women in this country will have an abortion in their lifetime, and we've got to be there for them. So I'm proud to be in this fight with you.
And on the other side, I'm even worried about contraception in Tennessee. So we've got to keep fighting for that because otherwise it's just going to put more people at risk.
That's right. That's a conversation for another day. Hope that hopefully we'll never have to.
We will not run out of things to talk about.
Thank you, my friend.
Thank you.